Those who are addicted to there are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way is improving yourself and the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, non-religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thank you. All right.
I'd like to introduce the first speaker, Kevin R. from Capture the Mirror. Group of NA.
My name's Kevin. I tell you, I got to stand up. It's a little more natural to speak and share at a meeting standing up. Unless you're this guy Rob who comes to my home group and in a discussion meeting, he gives leads sitting down. But don't laugh. If you're not laughing, it's probably you. You know, I'm honored to be here. You know, truly, I was telling my friend Lance, every year when I come up here, I come around that bend up there. As soon as I see those tents down in that field, I get a real special feeling in my heart. I do. But again, you know, I've been so fortunate to be invited to come up here today to share. The Laurel Mountain Highlands Retreat is like I said, it's a real special event for me. I was blessed to be here for the first one. And I've been to many of them since then. And, you know, a lot of really, really impactful things have happened to me in the course of my journey, my recovery, and in my life at this retreat. I've met some very special friends here. I see very special friends here every year, people I really look forward to. I know if I don't see them anywhere else throughout the year, I'm going to see them here at this retreat. I've had laughter and tears around campfires. I've heard awesome messages here in this pavilion. Over at the old amphitheater, just standing next to a tree next to someone who was just opening up and pouring out, you know, some of their experience. So I'm really honored to be here. Laurel Mountain Highlands area is like honestly one of my absolute favorite places. If I ever had to relocate, I could feel real at home recovering in the Laurel Mountain Highlands area. And I'm not just saying that. You know, I think about, you know, Jason and Lance and Joe and Drew and, you know, Keith and all the people and over the years have just been special parts of my life. Richard, you know, God rest his soul. So I'm just humbled. I'm humbled and I'm honored to be here. This committee's on the ball, let me tell you, because I got asked to speak like in March. I'm like, you know, is it like the first kickoff fundraiser or something? No, the retreat. I'm like, holy shit, man, you got your stuff together up here. And I really hadn't thought too much about it, and a couple weeks ago, whatever, I think Drew and I connected, and it was a topic. And so right away, I recognized the phrase coming out of the basic text, and I'd be lying if I told you I knew exactly where to look at. I had to kind of work, you know, but it's in the symbol part of the basic text. And that's another reason why I love this area, and I love this retreat, I love this event. I got to put a timer on myself, because Tim knows I will go and go and go. You know, you have to just, like, you know, stuff a sock in my mouth or something. So I like to set timers for myself so I don't put everybody to sleep. But yeah, it came out of the basic text. And just so, you know, if you hear nothing else, let me give you some pure words of recovery that come right out of our book. And it relates, you know, this is where this topic comes from. And it's a discussion about our symbol, which I was excited to see. I'm looking forward to the workshop later on the symbol. I'm gonna hear whoever's sharing on that. But it goes something like this. It talks about the different parts of the symbol and that the base of our symbol denotes goodwill, the ground of both the fellowship and the members of our society. We're a society. Goodwill is best exemplified in service. Proper service is doing the right thing for the right reason. When goodwill supports and motivates both the individual and the fellowship, we are fully whole and wholly free. Probably the last to be lost is freedom. The last to be lost to freedom will be the stigma of being an addict. And that comes right from our book. And that's where I imagine that they pulled this topic from. And, you know, when I prayed on it, when I kind of just reflected a little bit this week on what that means to me, You know, it's a very significant topic. Because at first I'm like, how do you talk about the holy freely whole, full of shit? You know, that could be any of those things. But you know, what I'll share is my experience, and if it's something that you don't agree with, that's okay. You know, we have a right to have our own experience in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, that's part of the freedom of the fellowship and freedom of recovery. But for me, I'll get into a little bit about how that topic has impacted me and what it means to me as I stand up here before you. Let me just tell you a little bit about myself. You know, I just turned 52 years old a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's crazy to think about being 52 years old. My clean date is January the 7th of 1990. And I got clean when, if you're like me and you're not good at math, I got clean when I was 18 years old. That wasn't the first time I got clean. I came in here on the multiple white key tag program. You know, I got here the first time when I was 15, and I looked at all of you and I was like, oh shit, this ain't for me. I can't have the problem they have. I'm too young to be an addict. Never mind, I ended up, you know, locked up for 35 days and consequences. By that point in my life, I had already had to go to various professionals. I remember getting thrown out of school and having to meet with the police and going to see a psychologist if they would let me come back to school, things like that. That had already happened to me. But when I got here the first time at 15, I thought I was too young to be an addict. You know, my experience is in listening to you all over the course of these years is that when we walk in here, we all have something that we think makes us different. You know, I'm so self-centered and egotistical that I thought I was the only one with that problem. But we come in here either too young, too old, too rich. We shot too much dope. We didn't shoot any dope. We have a record. We've never been arrested. You know, whatever it is, our disease tells us we don't belong here. And that was the leverage my disease tried to grab on to me and did so successfully because I went back out a couple more times, you know, more research. I always remember the pamphlet, Am I an Addict? That was the first piece of Narcotics Anonymous literature that I ever put in my hands. And I picked it up not because I was inspired or wanted to learn about NA. I was trying to disprove that I belonged here. And I'm going, did you do this? And you know, folks that know me know that I'm a little bit of an NA history buff. And I'll tell you that version of the Am I an Addict IP that was at the meeting I went to, my first NA meeting in 1987, it had a question in there about, did you cut your plant and smoke it before it was 2 feet tall or something like that? And that hit me a certain way because I hadn't done that. But I did cut someone else's plant and smoke it before it was 2 feet tall. You know? This guy in the neighborhood, Paul, we all knew he grew weed, and we followed him into the woods a couple times and found his little spots. And we went from pinching off little bits to just chopping the fucking things down, you know? But even then, I thought I didn't belong here. And I went, you know, and ultimately what happened for me is I could not deny the truth. You know, once you know the truth, you know the truth. I could try to deny it. I could put drugs on top of it. Each time I went back out, the drugs changed. I went from this little bit of drinking, a little bit of weed, to this and that, and trying pills, eating pills I didn't know what they were, you know, to snorting powders, to smoking things that were powders, then were changed into a little harder substance, you know, with your fingers burning on that little piece of glass, you know. And I did things I said I would never do. Every time I went out there, that Am I an Addict pamphlet, when I would come back, I could check more stuff off the list. And so ultimately for me, what happened was a miracle happened, you know. You know, it's the miracle of Narcotics Anonymous. It's the miracle of surrender. And that happened for me. And it didn't happen in a way that where there was fireworks and doves being released and stuff like that. I was in an alley in Manesson, Pennsylvania, just down off of 9th Street. I pulled this car over that had, you know, three other knuckleheads in it. And two were fist fighting throughout the evening or morning. The other one had gotten beat up really bad, had his face all bludgeoned and bloody. And I had to pull over for him to throw up. And I don't even know whose car we had. We borrowed a car. And when he lifted his face up and I saw the blood, and I had a moment of clarity. And I was like, what am I doing here? How did this happen? Rewind 6 weeks earlier, I thought it was a good idea to smoke a little bit of weed and have a beer. I had been clean earlier that year. I was a GSR. It wasn't like I hadn't had some grounding in this process. But I remember at that time, that was in 1989, I called my sponsor, George, at the time, and I thanked him for helping me. And I let him know that he was being relieved of his duties, that I had gone about as far as I could in this process, and I benefited from it, and I was no longer in need of NA. And I wished him well, and he laughed at me, you know? And he told me, "You're so full of shit." And I'm like, "Well, you people need to think it that way, but I have a little bit of a different idea." And so he said, "Well, with any luck, you'll be back. And when you come back, I'll be here for you." And so that scene I described in that alley in Manesson was on January the 6th. It was a Saturday morning, you know. I went out for the evening the night before at 11 o'clock. That's when we go out, right? And I called George that night, that Saturday night, you know, just kind of coming down off of what I was doing, try to sleep it off, and called him up and I just said, "Hey man, you were right." Nah, that's not what I said. I think I said, "Hey, how's it going?" And he said, "How are you doing?" I said, "Oh, I'm fine."
Right.
Meanwhile, if you could just see the things that had happened to me the 6 weeks prior to that in sequence, you would just scratch your head and say, "Well, this guy's just delusional." But I got clean. I came clean with him, and I did share with him what was going on. I told him how bad it was and how horrible I felt, and how alone I felt. And he said, "Man, welcome back." He might have said, "I told you so," I don't know. And then I remember this real clearly. He said, "Do you have anything? Are you holding anything? You know? You people are trained to like really get after it, right? I mean, I was just calling a talk. You mean, I have to get rid of stuff? You know? It was like, I didn't even remember like thinking to call him. It just, all of a sudden, I'm on the phone with him. I didn't make a conscious decision in that alley or throughout that evening before I picked up that phone. "Hey Kevin, it's time to get clean again. Give George a call, we're gonna change your life." That was not what happened. I believe now that it was God in my understanding, intervening in my life, you know, having that moment of surrender. And I said, "Yeah, I think I got some pills." He said, "You gotta get rid of them." I said, "Okay, you know, I will after your phone." He said, no. And see, back then, like, I hate when people do this, but I'll do it just because it's the truth. You know, we didn't have cordless cell phones, whatever phones. That was like a cord, you know. I was in the basement of my parents' house with, like, this 20-foot cord, and I'm wandering around. And he's like, "You got to flush that stuff." I'm like, "Really?" He said, "Yeah." And so I got the stuff, and he said, "Well, I put the phone to right by the toilet." You know, he said, "Is that it?" I said, "No." He said, "Are you sure?" And that was it. And from that moment forward, I haven't used. And, you know, I haven't used. I've been clean. The next day was the 7th. That was the miracle. You know, that was the miracle. That surrender process. And I had no idea. What was about to happen to me. I could have never, I don't have the ability now to comprehend what's coming to me a day, a week, a year from now. That's how this ride has been for me. If you had told me 2 years ago some of the things that have happened to me as a result of believing in this process and following this, your suggestions, and working these steps and applying these principles in my life, things that have happened in the past 2 years I probably wouldn't have believed. I was on TV a couple months ago. Fuck yeah. You know? It was cool as hell. Like, for a good reason, you know?
That's right.
You know, and I did good. I did good. And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm coming from the perspective of someone who hates himself. I'm coming from the perspective of someone who doesn't believe I can do anything. See, that's what is at the core of my disease. That I'm not good. That I'm stupid. That nobody likes me. That everything's bad, that everything's wrong, that you're not going to accomplish anything. So whenever I have an opportunity to feel good today, and if that's you, feel good about that shit. You know? It's amazing what's happened in this process. When I think about that topic, and where it's talking about the last thing to go is the stigma. I'm just checking my time here, people. Okay, we're not bad. Narcotics Anonymous has worked for me. It's worked on so many levels. You know, I stand here, I told you I'm 52 years old. I have a beautiful family that God has blessed me with. You know, that my family has never seen me high. My brothers and sisters have. And you know, if you got family, if you got siblings and extended family like I do, hey, 33 years later, they don't let me forget some of this shit.
That's right.
You know, I still got to hear about, you know, how I stole all this liquor at my brother's wedding in 1987. And, you know, what did you do with all that? You know, don't worry about it. You know? My mom, God rest her soul, you know, I came clean with her. But for the longest time, she had this mystery. She was like in charge of Girl Scouts or something. Like she was like a whatever they call the person in charge. And, you know, Every about February, March of every year, you know what happens with the Girl Scouts, right?
Cookies.
Cookies. Well, I found my way into the cachet of cookie money one year, you know, when I was getting high. And I was trying to figure out how to cash all these checks with all these people with the Girl Scouts name on it. But my mom, she held on to that till I worked my ninth step with her. She said, I knew it! I knew that was you. Sorry, Mom, what can I say? You know? And I made those amends. But today I got a family. My kids don't know that guy. My kids don't know that person. My wife never met that person. You know, I've been with my wife. I met my wife right after the first Laurel Mountain Highlands retreat in 1997. This is the end of August. We went on our first date September 12th of 1997. We got married in 2001. I still feel like I'm trying to learn how to be in a relationship. Because, you know, at the core of my disease, again, I tell you, is that insecurity, that I'm not good enough. I still wonder, like, why I deserve what I have. You know, it's interesting. My family hasn't seen the use. But they have seen the negative effects of the disease of addiction, for sure. I stand here as someone who had 20 years clean and broke a door down in my house because my wife wanted me to fix it and I didn't feel like it. And I hadn't been going to meetings and I hadn't been praying and I hadn't been applying steps in my life. So I knocked the bathroom door off the hinges and told her it's fixed. You can get in there now. I tell you this because, like I said, she hasn't seen me high, but she has seen the disease of addiction alive in me. Because my disease is not just about using drugs. You taught me that. My kids have had the bad experience of seeing my defects of character and shortcomings. I'm not proud of that. You know, that's why I still come to meetings with 33 years clean. I got two home groups. People give me shit about that. I got the best excuse in the world. It's foolproof. It's a bulletproof reason. Like, hey, I was taught you only have one vote in that name. I used to tell people shit like that. The bulletproof reason for having two home groups. My sponsor does. I got to do what he does. I can blame it on him. He's got two home groups. But by many standards of the world, life's been good for me. You know, I came here as someone who, I had to scrub desks. I had to scrub. I flunked at the end of high school. I was not going to graduate. They brought me into the office. They gave me the news. It was that day, if you remember, in your own experience, you know how, like, about a week before everyone else gets out of school, they let the seniors loose, right? It was that day, which is supposed to be a happy day. And right before they cut everybody loose, they brought me in to say, sorry, pal, you're not going to make it. Seniors, go home, you're done for the year. I'm walking down the hall, punching walls, kicking shit, got in my car. My car that didn't, I don't know whose license plate it was. It wasn't inspected. I don't even think the car was in my name. I bought it off. I traded a pair of stereo speakers for this car.
That's right.
And that's how we roll, right?
Mm-hmm.
Peeling wheels in the parking lot and fuck this place. My mom called. She knew the principal. They cut some kind of deal. So the next week, I'm there, and they're like, "You want to graduate?" I'm thinking they're going to make me write some papers or go do a book report in a library or something. they say they give me a bucket and sandpaper and scrubby shit, and they're like, "You're going to go around to these rooms and scrub the graffiti off the desks." In some of the rooms, there were students there, like the underclassmen. And they would have to get up and stand and hold their shit while I'm scrubbing their desk. Humiliating. I can't even believe I did that, to be honest with you. But I did. And that's how I graduated high school. Fast forward to me having a handful of months clean, 6-7 months clean, and an addict named John, who I was in rehab with. When I came back, I was jealous of him. I was in rehab with him the year before. I come back. He's giving leads, he's sponsoring people, and I'm back at a white key tag. He's like, "Dude, you should think about going to college." College? Bro, I had to scrub desks to get my diploma, dude. What the fuck are you talking about? You know, I was at the time, I was carrying shingles, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I was delivering pizzas and shit, you know, and that, I was selling sweepers. I did all that when I got clean, you know. Those kind of like sales jobs, when you're a newcomer, and maybe not even newcomer, but blah, 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 you can make, you know, whatever, $5,000 a month, da, 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 you know, and I was like, straight on that. College? No, no. And I stepped back, you know what, yeah, fuck it, you know, stole out some papers. See, John was one of those addicts we talk about in Just for Today, the reading at the end of the meeting. Just for today, I'll have faith in someone who believes in me. I don't have to believe in myself. You told me, have faith in someone else that believes in you. And John was that guy. I had many of those people. John's faith in me was enough to carry me. Let me tell you about John. John's been here. John's been here. He's an addict that spent time at this retreat. Let me tell you about another guy named Brian. Brian's been here too. He came up with me one time. I was asked to speak at one of the, whatever topic it was. We drove up together for the day. I love Brian. I sponsored Brian for a lot of years. With about 13, 14 years clean, he decided to go back out. Last November, Brian's struggling. His dad dies. I go to the funeral home. I hug Brian. He looks terrible. Terrible. A couple weeks later, Brian died. Younger than me. I'm 52. He was probably 49. Met him when he was in his 20s. He died alone. That's how addicts die that don't have this. They walk away from this. 3 weeks later, my friend John, who believed in me when I didn't believe in myself, who was in the middle of this process, home group, sponsor, service, tells me he has cancer.
What?
And John, if you know John, if you know who I'm talking about, he was a little bit full of shit, I'm just saying. You know, he could tell some stories. It was like stage 4, it was like the worst thing possible. I'm like, how can they tell? You just got told yesterday, like, you know, you gotta go get tested. He said, no, that's what it is. A couple weeks later, I'm standing in a hospital room in the intensive care unit down at Shadyside Hospital. With my sponsor, who was also John's sponsor, 3-4 of my best friends, John's family. We held on to each other. We prayed together. We cried. We laughed. We loved John until he took his last breath. See, that's what Narcotics Anonymous does for us. That's why I keep coming back. I don't want to die alone like Brian did. He didn't have to die alone. He had people that loved him. I don't know how I got into all that, you know. I'm just sharing what's coming out of me. I prayed before the meeting, and Oh, the Freely Whole thing, right. As my life progressed and I went to school, a guy that had to scrub dust to get a diploma, my first semester, F, D, three C's. It's ain't for me, guys. I told you, John. See? No. Do this, do that. I was gonna sign out. You know, I'm leaving this school. I go to the office. Say, just, you know, how do I sign out of this place? You know? And go down the hall. Take this paper. Go there. Get this signed. You know how colleges do? They can make you put a bunch of reading bullshit. Run around. You know, red tape. Before it was said and done, I'm sitting in front of like a counselor type person who looks at my grades, but she says, "Do you like math?" I said, "Hell no, I don't like math." So I failed algebra. College algebra. It wasn't even college algebra. It was like the remedial algebra that you had to take the college algebra. I mean, imagine me. I already have low self-esteem. I was so defeated. She says, "Kevin, the major you picked is called numerical control. You hate math and you struggled with this intro algebra. Why are you majoring in that?" John didn't have all the answers. John thought it was a good idea for me to major in that. I ain't trying to paint him like he's a saint, you know what I mean? I love the guy, but he was doing a major like that, engineering. Now that dude knew math, man. He was a smart ass dude. "You know, Kevin, you already have all your financial aid and da-da-da-da, this and that. Why don't you just let us do some, like, testing with you, get you a tutor, retake that algebra, pass it, blah, blah, blah." So I did. I stayed. I got an A in that algebra class. I did okay. So what happened after that is I stuck around. I finished a bachelor's degree. Who knew? The guy that had the scrub desk and peel wheels in the parking lot with the car that wasn't even in my name, you know, could do that. I started a career, you know. I got involved in the counseling field. Go figure, right? So many of us do. I was bad at it because I wasn't trained. I just thought I knew shit. You know, I had a degree in psychology and sociology, and I'm going to show up and save lives or whatever. But I didn't really know what I was doing. So I decided, you know, I got to learn how to do this job. Back to school. Master's degree. I ain't telling you this to impress you. I'm the guy that can't graduate high school. I got a master's degree. Now, I'm a school counselor. Holy shit, I got thrown out of school. I had to go see psychologists and shit to get back in because I did some stuff that was against the rules. Now I'm a high school guidance counselor. Holy shit, I was terrified. And here's what happened to me, and this is why I share this. Because it talks in there about being holy, freely whole and wholly free, and about the stigma being the last thing to go, right? I was terrified. Being in that world of so-called professionals and how I viewed that world and how I felt like I did not belong there and how I got this disease that tells me I'm a piece of shit, I pulled back from NA. I can't go to this meeting or that meeting. A student might see me. A parent might see me. What are they going to think? I don't know what I thought was going to happen. And I didn't have whatever it was that I needed to get through that. I didn't seek it. I struggled for years. Never in my whole journey have I ever felt like, well, I mean, since this time, the previous clean dates, I did walk away from NA. I never had that feeling like, oh, screw NA, I don't need it. I knew, I've been in love with NA since January the 7th of 1990 when I got that warm hug coming back. Here's my warning. But I didn't know how to exist in that world, still not fully realized my recovery, still not having fully worked through the steps the way I needed to. And I was terrified because of that stigma. And for a long time, I practiced what I now call drive-by recovery. Bless you. I'd go to a meeting in Greensburg because Greensburg was safe. No one knew me there. I'm not going to see a parent. What did I think was going to happen? I have no idea. But whatever it was, I was afraid of it. This went on. You know, I go back to school. I get another master's degree. You know, I take, I'm, you know, listen, this is another thing too. Let me give you fair warning. If this is just my experience, you can learn from it if you want to. Like my kids say, my the other day, "You did drugs, Dad." I said, "Yeah, I also cut my leg with a chainsaw when I was a kid. I don't recommend doing that either, right?" So what happened for me was that I got involved in the community. I used to say stuff like, "Well, the coin says, my gratitude speaks when I care and share with others the NA way. It doesn't limit it to NA. I can share and share with anybody." So now I'm in charge of the Midget Football League. I'm wreaking havoc. I got defects of character coming out like you can't believe. You know, I'm getting, it's just insane. You know, I run for a volunteer political office to be on my local school board. I get elected. I went through that process in ways now that if I was working a program would have been a lot different and better for some people. You know, I assimilate through my career, you know, and become a principal, and then I have the position that I have today. You know, I wear the title executive director. I'm in charge of a school that trains 900 kids how to go out into the world and work. And for the longest time, I was terrified that people would find out about me in that world. And I remember being on a corner on a sidewalk up in State College with one of the people who works for me, who she just retired. She was our principal. And she wanted to go to a restaurant and have a drink. And I said, so this was my big moment. The stigma, I was putting it to the test. The last thing to go is the stigma. Well, you know, I was like, I was asked this big revelation. I don't drink, you know, because I'm a person in recovery, and I used to get, and I was expecting like, but tell me about, she's like, so? Kevin, everyone's got something wrong with them. You know, we all got problems. We all been through something. And I was like, wow, it's not as horrible as I imagined. You know, and then from that crack in the door, over time, it's changed. And now I don't really care who knows. That's just for me. If you're in a different space with it, be there, and that's cool. You have your reasons, and they're probably very valid reasons. They are. If they're valid for you, they're valid. It's no judgment. Because I carry myself around for years. But being freely whole and wholly free for me, with that stigma finally being off of me, it's freeing. My people that are employees of mine know. I tell them about it. When I have someone struggling that works for me, I open up a little bit. I want them to know that just because we have different roles and different titles here, that if you need some help, there's a way to go get that help. And one person's not better than anybody else. Anonymity is a principle that I fully embrace that you taught me. That we're all on equal playing field here in Narcotics Anonymous. And guess what? I could go into any meeting, any town, any time, any place, and feel free of that fear that I had that some people would find out that I'm an addict and whatever horrible, I don't even know what I thought was going to happen. I know what the problem is. I still hadn't worked on myself enough. I still needed to get through the steps more and free myself of those shortcomings, those fears, those defects of character. And guess what? Here's the real hit. I have to keep doing that, because if I stop, if I don't have two home groups and call my sponsor and hit my knees and do the service work, I can resort right back to that place of fear where I'm going to hide and worry who knows I'm an addict. I know who I am today. I have purpose in life, and I am truly free, because that stigma of addiction for me is not weighing me down. You gave that gift to me. You gave that gift to me because you led me to the God of my understanding. He led me to you. You led me to Him. And I say God, and if that scares you, that's okay. It happens to be in the NA literature, the word God with capital G's in it. So anybody wants to, like, you know, split hairs, you can go in your book and look at that. You don't got to believe in the God I believe in. Hey, for 29 years, I believed in a different process spiritually than I believe now. And something happened to me, a series of events happened to me just before I had 29 years, 47 years old, that changed everything for me. And now I believe in things that I thought crazy people believed in. And it's true, I'm crazy. I'm crazy for God, I'm crazy for recovery, and I'm loving life. Because you, Narcotics Anonymous, have helped me become freely whole and wholly free. I love this area. Thanks for having me up here.
Thanks a lot, Kevin. All right. I would like to introduce the second speaker, Christy M.
Yeah.
We are pretty good.
Hi, Hi, everybody. I'm Christy. I'm an addict.
Hey, Christy.
My clean date is 11/23/12.
Yes.
So here I am. Here I am. Drew got a hold of me early. He said, Christy, you would be great to speak at work at one of these workshops. I said, oh, yes. So here I am. So I was doing some reading of the basic text this week. I was writing a little bit, thinking I'm preparing myself, realizing as I'm going along that it's helping me get out of my head. I was real surprised that I was writing stuff down that I was definitely not going to share, but at least it was something that I could take myself out of my way with. So that was interesting. That's something I learned this week about myself. Freely whole and wholly free. I took this very personally. I found that there are so many ways to take this topic, but for me, it was very personal. It was personal as a human being. Coming into this program, I was broken into so many pieces. And I know I'm not alone in saying that, but I can't speak for everybody. In this program, working the 12 steps specifically brought me that freedom, brought me that opportunity to become whole, brought me to a place where I could learn about who I was and who I am becoming. And that was eye-opening for me. I'm not real sure what I'm going to share, so let's find out, I guess. You know, in my addiction, I didn't have an identity. I didn't have an identity I identified with. I didn't have an identity that anybody else could recognize. My mom could call me her daughter, but she couldn't call me anything else because she couldn't identify who I was trying to be. She didn't know where I was going with my life. She only knew what I pretended to be, and she just worked with that. That's all she wanted to see, was who I was pretending to be. This straight girl, someone who was getting good grades, someone who was going to college, someone who was in all the academics and all the sports, and someone who was really achieving things in life. All I was doing was seeking attention. I just wanted somebody to notice me for a change. No one noticed me. I was alone, I was isolated. I was not myself, even though I was young, I was aware of that. And that was scary. It's scary to be young and realize that you don't even know who you are. Or that you're supposed to be something. You see other people around you doing things maybe that culture approves of, maybe something your family approves of, your neighbors approve of. But I was not any of those things. I was nothing that I saw around me. I lied, I cheated, I stole. I make up my own language sometimes. That's real. I stole. And I had no regrets, no remorse. I wasn't sorry for anything that I had done. And I didn't know why I had to be. I just know I wanted to be different. I wanted to be something else. I wanted to feel better. I wanted to feel accepted. I wanted someone to pay attention to me. I wanted somebody to see more than just my physical self. I wanted them to see my heart. I wanted them to see my soul. Even though my soul was shattered, my heart was broken. I didn't have the glue to put the pieces together, but I wanted somebody to notice. And when I came to this program, I met people who lived life on life's terms. And that was something I didn't understand, because I've been fighting life my entire life, because life didn't seem to be something that made sense or something that I could handle without being self-medicated. I couldn't understand why people wanted to have these normal lives, that they wanted to have families, that they wanted to go to school, that they wanted to have good jobs, that they wanted to have the husband, the white picket fence, the children, the pets at home, and all of that. Everything that you would consider normal. I wanted some of that, but I wanted it differently. Here I am, I'm old enough to where it wasn't appropriate to be gay at the time. So I'm dating men for show. I'm not myself. I'm dating men for show, seeing women on the side, trying to make relationships work for real, trying to put on this front that is so for real, I even believe it myself. I even married a man to make this all turn into something that was real, thinking that I was going to have this life that everybody else had, but yet I'm still using. I'm still embezzling money from my employer. I'm still going to jail over it. You know, I'm still not listening to any of the rules of anything that's going on. I'm standing out, but I'm not standing up for myself. And I had such a problem being honest. I couldn't be honest if I wanted to be honest. I felt like if I exposed myself to any degree, you would see all those broken pieces. All those broken pieces that just followed me everywhere. The wreckage of my past, I left broken pieces there. So throughout the world, there was just broken pieces just left everywhere. And everywhere I went, I left some behind. And then I took some new ones with me, and they shattered, and I had some new broken pieces. I come to this program, I find a higher power. I find people who could believe in me until I can believe in myself. I find the 12 steps, which teach me to face all those demons. That I needed to face. I needed to see myself. I needed to see what I was doing to myself. I needed to see how sick I was making myself. See, I don't not only come with the disease of addiction, but I have the disease of diabetes. And it's a terrible disease. At the time, I had borderline personality and major depression. You know, I come with a lot of mental and physical diseases that, on top of addiction, they all affect each other. And it causes a lot of issues. So self-medicating was the only way out. It was the only way in. It was the only way to exist. And I would do anything I could to make myself better, to make myself forget, to make myself just find some sort of false peace so I could go on to the next moment. And and I just felt physically broken, spiritually broken. So when I found my higher power, I started to understand what it's like to have something bigger than myself guide me in something where I'm not left responsible for everything. I'm responsible for my behaviors and my actions. But I can pray to my God and say, God, take my will and my life and guide me in my recovery. Show me how to live clean. I can do that today. I couldn't do that yesterday. I can pray for forgiveness today because I can forgive others today. I can forgive myself today. And that's huge. Now, I learned that through the 12 steps. I've learned service. I've learned to give back to myself, to another human being, and to my community. Whether that be my NA community or outside community. Kevin, I just want to say I'm a Girl Scout leader. And I'm a lead volunteer, so I'm in charge of many troops. I just want to let you know. I got your number. So, people trust me today. They trust me with their children. I'm able to be a mentor today. And I'm able to be honest. I can tell those kids in today's world, if it comes up, I don't have to make a big spectacle of myself. But with responsibility, I can say, yes, I am gay. Yes, I have a wife and a happy family and four dogs, and I have a great life, and I live a healthy life and a healthy relationship. I can tell people that today. I'm standing here right now telling you today, where 10 years ago, I probably couldn't say it in exactly the same way. So that really takes some of those broken pieces and puts them back together. It really does. I found acceptance in myself. I found acceptance in what I can't control. I can't control these ailments. I can't control some of these diseases. But I can control how I take care of myself. Willingness I'm working on. Still working on that willingness piece, but I'm starting to put those pieces together, and I'm starting to understand that I still have reasons to live, I still have reasons to go on, and I still have a lot of reasons why I'm here. My higher power gives me reasons to be here. If I had no reason to be here, I would not be here. And slowly, the pieces of my wreckage of my past, I'm starting to make amends, and I'm starting to heal, and I'm starting to face all those traumas and starting to really see, not just look at these things, write about them on paper, but to really see them for what they are. Not just push them in the back of my head, not just, you know, try to forget about them or pretend they didn't happen, but really see what they are. See things I've done, see how I could have handled things better, things I've said, things that I've felt even, and how I could have felt differently, and how I could have changed my behaviors. And I learned that in this program. I think the most freeing steps for me were step 4 and step 6. step four, I could really find freedom in admitting my wrong, admitting my part in them. And step six, my character defects. I had 7 pages of them. I had so many, I was a big piece of shit when I was going through my step work. But you know what? That's okay. It didn't mean that I really was a big piece of shit. That just meant I was human. I can admit my faults. And I can see that some really weren't that much of a fault. It's just something that was a matter of perspective. You know, so I'm able to change my mind. I'm able to make choices today. Without the freedom of this program and getting the freedom of, you know, facing all those things, I wouldn't have the freedom of choice that I do. I'm not like chained in to that addiction where my choices are made for me. The wanting, the using, the needing, the I have to find more. I need to use. I want to use. I have to use in order to continue my life. So everything is the choices are made for you. They're made for you. You're stuck. You're stuck in this rut. You're in this circle that never ends until something breaks it. Now I can make choices that are positive. I can make choices that make me freer. I can do more step work. I can attend more NA functions. I can talk to my sponsor. I can broaden my Wii, you know? And that makes me more whole as a person. It's what I do today that makes me whole. I'm not as broken anymore. Whatever pieces I have left, I can still work on, but I can work on with a whole heart. My soul is repairing and healing, but I have to work on it every day. I have to. There's no way I can skip a day. If I take a day off, I'm going right back to where I started, and I'm not going to live. I won't live through it. So I deal with resentments from others, and I have to make these amends. And that is part of my pieces. Because while I had my part, I had to deal with others who had a part in my life as well. But it's still my part to find forgiveness for me. And that's part of making me whole too. You know, that's really not off topic. It's really part of it. I didn't want to forget to mention that. Because if I don't make those amends, if I leave those resentments, if I leave that guilt, if I leave all of that stuff built up and scattered in those pieces I decided not to deal with yet, there's a piece of my whole broken. And I'm still not whole. I can't drink from an empty cup. I can't stay hydrated from one that is not full. You know, I need to take care of my relationship with others as well as my relationship with myself. And that's really, really important. It's really important to me. And every time I get the opportunity to do that, I feel in my body bigger, more whole, more stability, I feel stronger. And I'm able to share that with other people. Because we all need to feed that off of each other. You know, in the beginning, I might not have been whole, and other people might have been whole and sharing their wholeness with me. But I have to start somewhere. And whatever pieces I can start to put together, I can share that with someone else. So while there's a lot of things in the basic text that talk about being freely whole and wholly free, I looked up a lot about freedom, but I thought personally about myself and how broken I came from and how whole I've become in the program and how much better I can be for myself and understand better who I am and what I want to be and who I'm becoming, and kind of proud of that. And it feels good to feel proud of that. Not a feeling that you get to feel real often. And I guess I just really look forward to learning more and growing more in this program. I want to thank everybody for letting me share. Thanks for having me. I'm Christy. I'm an addict.
I'd like to thank the speakers for sharing their experience tonight. We have a number today.